We'll go to the office, she said, desperation in her voice. Maybe the police are finished with it now. I can try to find this October list. She caught a glimpse of herself reflected in a window. How like everyone else she looked. How normal. Tan stretch pants, tight burgundy sweater, leather jacket, the purse over her shoulder, the Tiffany bag dangling from her hand, a handsome man at her side. On their way to a movie or a health club or brunch with friends. How like everyone else. Yet how different.
That guy Joseph? Daniel replied. Jesus. You know, his giddiness was the most scary. His joking. It's just sick.
Part of me thinks I should go to the police anyway, she said, then looked at him. What do you think? Daniel considered this.
Honestly, I think the consequences could be disastrous if he found out.
But they know how to handle these things, Gabriella said fervently. They have kidnap specialists. I'm sure they do. Hostage negotiators.
This is different. It's not like Joseph's asking for money that you can agree to pay him, and the police would back you up on that. If you go to them, even assuming Joseph doesn't find out about it, the October list is going to come up, and the cops are going to want it.
After a moment, she said, True. Another dab of tissue to her eye.
And we have to assume that Joseph's doing what he threatened, having somebody watch you to make sure you don't go near the police.
You don't deserve this, Daniel. You shouldn't have anything to do with it, with me. I didn't even know you 24 hours ago. You should just go home and forget all about me. Gabriella sensed his head swiveling. He said,
Not really interested in that.
In what?
Forgetting about you.
She gripped his arm and briefly rested her head against his solid biceps. She'd seen a movie starring the actor whom Daniel resembled, in which the man had removed his shirt, to the thrill of most women in the audience. Not only were their faces similar, but their builds closely matched. My office is in Midtown East. Let's get a cab. We should move fast. The deadline, 6 p.m. We have so much to do. She turned to look for a taxi.
Wait,
he said in a sharp whisper. What?
We're being followed,
Daniel said. Are you sure? She sounded doubtful, but she looked behind and saw a van easing to the curb. Joseph?
I didn't see any vans before.
If it's police, she said, panic in her voice, and Joseph sees, he'll think we called them. He'll kill Sarah.
We're not sure it's the cops. Maybe it's a coincidence.
But the van wasn't happenstance. It was, in fact, occupied by the police. This was confirmed when they noticed a blue and white NYPD patrol car start toward them from Columbus Circle, then brake suddenly and make a U-turn. She said, Somebody in the van just radioed the squad car and told them to get the hell out of here. Yep, it's cops. They're hoping I'll lead them to Charles.
And look,
Daniel muttered. She followed his eyes toward what was probably an unmarked police car, a gray sedan with several small antennas bristling on the roof. God damn it, she snapped, furious. They're all over the place.
What should we do?
After a moment of internal debate, she said, Let's go back to my apartment. Wait, walk over there, by the curb.
What?
Stay in the sunlight. Daniel frowned uncertainly. Then he gave a smile.
You want them to see us.
Exactly. In 10 minutes, they were back at her apartment building. They found no unwelcome assailants inside this time and stepped into the hesitant elevator for a ride to the second floor. In her unit, which faced south, she set the Tiffany bag he'd brought for her on an antique table by the door, her purse, too. Shucked her jacket and slung it on a hook. Daniel looked around the place, focused on the books, the pictures of a little blonde girl.
Sarah, he said.
She didn't bother to nod. It wasn't a question anyway. Daniel noted other pictures, mostly of Gabriella by herself, a few with her and her parents. One he studied for a long moment.
You and your father?
She looked his way. That's right.
He's a good-looking man. Do your parents live in the city?
He passed away, she told him. Mom's in a home.
I'm sorry. What did he do for a living?
Worked for the power company. Con Ed, manager. The picture had been taken a decade ago. It depicted a 22-year-old Gabriella and her father, exactly 30 years older. They shared the same birthday, May 10th. Taurus. She told Daniel this, then added wistfully, "He used to say people who are Tauruses think astrology is a lot of bull." Daniel laughed, and he looked over the image of the tall man with trim, salt-and-pepper hair once more. She didn't tell him that the picture had been taken a week before his death. They had the same expression on their faces, easy and humorous, unrehearsed. Her mother had been having a good day, and she'd playfully snapped the picture. Then Daniel noted a dozen framed artistic photographs, all in black and white. He walked close to examine them. They were mostly still lifes and landscape, but some portraits too. He asked,
"So these are yours?"
She was gazing out the window through a slit in a side curtain. "What?"
"These photos. Yours?"
"Yes."
"Well, I'm impressed."
He walked along the carpeted floor in front of them, bending close to examine each one. "I used to paint, but I decided I liked photography better. There's something seductive about taking reality and controlling it." Her voice was enthusiastic, but that energy suddenly vanished and she fell silent as she gazed at a framed crayon drawing of a heart. "I love you, Mommy," was painstakingly written in the margin. Now Daniel eased to the window. "See the cops?" She turned away from the artwork.
"Not yet,"
he replied, looking out again. They discussed what to do next, how to save Sarah, getting into the Prescott Investments office, trying to find the October list and the money. She fell silent and sat heavily in a chair. "It's overwhelming," she said.
"Nothing's overwhelming if you take it step by step."
Scanning the street, he clicked his tongue.
"Yep, there they are. There's a playground across the street. A couple hanging out there, heads down. Only they're in business suits and there's no kids nearby. They might be talking into microphones in their sleeves. Oh, and then on the roof of the building facing yours, it looks like that duo from the street."
"The roof?" she asked with a frown of disbelief. "They're looking in?"
"No, they're just setting up equipment, it looks like. Microphone, a dish of some kind."
Gabriella turned away and looked absently around the room. "All right." Daniel looked at her inquiringly. "Let me know when they're finished." She walked back and forth in front of the window, pacing anxiously. Only a minute later, he said,
"Okay, they're aiming some big phallic lens this way."
She stepped close to him and whispered, "Let's talk about Charles and the case, but don't say anything about Joseph." He nodded. For 5 minutes, they carried on an improvised but credible conversation about Charles Prescott's alleged crimes and her desperate situation. At one point, though, real tears began cascading down her cheeks, and she had to pause to compose herself. Then, standing right in front of the window, she instructed, "Come here."
"What?"
Daniel asked. "Come here," she repeated firmly. Frowning, curious at her tone, Daniel did as instructed. As a cool autumn breeze flowed into the room from the open window, she gripped him hard and kissed him on his mouth. Tentatively at first, then more firmly. "Kiss me back," she whispered. He was startled, but he did as ordered, firmly and with passion, his grip on her shoulders nearly hurt. She could sense his genuine desire. She felt a burst of longing within her. Then Gabriella forced herself to tell him in a whisper, "Step back and look me over like you're enjoying what you're seeing." She stripped her burgundy sweater off.
"I don't have to pretend about that,"
Daniel mouthed. In her pale blue bra and close-fitting stretch pants, she walked to the window, paused for a moment, and pulled the curtain shut. She then put the sweater back on.
"Bummer,"
he whispered. She held her fingers to her lips. She grabbed the TV remote and, muting the volume, turned the unit and the cable box on,
then scrolled through pay-per-view channels until she found an adult movie. Two clicks and the bad film came to life in medias res, depicting a young couple going at it poolside in a very stressed lounger. The volume rose. She nodded to the door, then snagged the leather jacket from the rack in the hall. But her face grew somber as she looked at the garment on a neighboring hook, a child's faux fur parka. More tears flowed. Daniel put his arm around her shoulder, gave an encouraging hug. Gabriella pulled on sunglasses. He did too, and they stepped out the door into the hallway, which smelled of carpet and cleanser. In 10 minutes, they were slipping out of the service entrance in the back of the building and heading once more for Central Park, free of prying eyes and ears. Chapter 11. 11:15 a.m. Saturday, 45 minutes earlier.
"I still can't believe it," Gabriella whispered. "If you ever met him, met Charles, you'd think it was impossible what those men were saying."
She and Daniel continued walking in silence into the shadows of the Upper West Side. They were almost to her apartment. There, she'd explained, she'd call co-worker Elena and Charles's lawyer and see if she could piece together what had happened. She added,
"He was the nicest guy in the world. When I got divorced, he said anything I needed, just let him know. He found a lawyer for the divorce, one of the best in the city. He lent me $10,000 for expenses. But it wasn't a loan. I tried to pay him back, but he wouldn't take a penny."
She took a tissue and pressed it to her eyes. They turned down a canyon-like cross street to head west. In a moment, they were at her building, a 5-story brick structure a few blocks from Central Park, between Columbus and Amsterdam. As they walked into the lobby, a man, standing near the elevator, looked her up and down.
"Gabriella McKenzie?"
"Shit, another cop?" she whispered to Daniel.
Then their eyes noted he carried a paper Whole Foods shopping bag.
"What's this?" she asked softly.
"You are Gabriella?"
The man was 6'2". He was solid, but not fat. Solid the way a bag of fertilizers solid. His hair was a mass of curly blonde ringlets.
"Yes. I'm sorry, who are you?"
A giddy laugh.
"Hey there. How are you doing? Beautiful morning, isn't it? Gorgeous.
Predicting overcast and temperatures plummeting later, but let's enjoy what we've got now, shall we?"
He strode up to them, moving in a lithe way for a large man. A faint grin.
"I'm Joseph."
He didn't extend his hand.
"Don't try to rack your brains. We've never met."
A nod at Daniel, who gazed into the man's dark eyes. Under an unbuttoned black overcoat, he wore a loose-fitting brown suit and a dress shirt with 2 slashes of crease across the belly. His teeth, curiously, had a slightly pinkish tint.
"And you?"
She didn't complete the question, but instead asked, "How do you know me?"
"Oh, I don't yet. Not personally, that is. My loss, that. How you doing today? Not in the mood to chat? No worries. I've got something you'll be interested in."
"What are you talking about? Leave us alone."
"Wait. Interested," I said. "Aren't you curious exactly what?"
"No."
"Oh, hey. I'll bet you will be."
"Betcha $5. Want to take me up?"
"Hey, back off, mister,"
Daniel said, moving forward an inch or two. Joseph held up a hand as if warding off a blow. Grinning, cringing, playful.
"Just take a peek. Pretty please? I'm begging you."
He lifted the shopping bag. Gabriella's head swiveled toward Daniel as Joseph reached into the bag and withdrew a windbreaker, black and blue like the water of New York Harbor at dusk. It was a child's size. He also displayed a plastic doll, similar to Barbie, but the dress had been removed from the toy. The beige flesh glowed in a band of sunlight. Gabriella screamed.
Joseph frowned broadly.
The ears, the ears!
He tapped his own.
That was noisy.
She raged. Where did you get those? That's Sarah's jacket and her doll! She stepped back and grabbed her cell phone.
Joseph said, Oh, about the phone. Just think about why I might not want you to make any calls. Is that too much of a stretch?
I'll vote it isn't. What the hell is this?
Daniel barked. Joseph wagged a finger his way but said nothing. Her voice cracking, Gabriella repeated,
Where did you get those? Where is she? Who are you?
So many, many questions. Let's take them one at a time. I got the jacket from Ms. Sarah. That's a no-brainer. And where could she be? Where do you think? With some friends of mine.
As for question number three, I'll hold off on that for the time being.
Gabriella lunged, grabbing him by the lapels. This caught Joseph off guard and he stumbled back, an angry frown replacing the smirk. Daniel restrained her. Then the slick grin was back on Joseph's face.
Relax, little Sarah's fine.
Daniel eased closer yet. Joseph opened his coat and jacket and displayed the butt of a pistol.
More show and tell, so settle down there, cowboy.
Daniel, eyes wide, stepped back. Gabriella gasped as she stared at the weapon. Joseph looked Daniel up and down.
And who exactly are you, cowboy?
I'm a friend.
Friend? Okay, let me see your wallet.
Daniel hesitated, then dug into his pocket and handed him a wad of cash. Hundreds and fifties, probably $1,000.
That's what goes into a wallet. That's not a wallet. Take it.
I don't want it. I want your wallet.
Gabriella shouted, Where's Sarah? What have you done? Joseph tapped his ears again.
Let's not draw too much attention to ourselves. This, he tapped the pistol, is even louder than your hysteria.
Now, cowboy, wallet.
Daniel handed the supple leather over.
No, no.
Gabriella was crying now. As he flipped through the billfold, Joseph seemed to be memorizing various facts. He slipped out one of the business cards and examined it.
The Norwalk Fund.
Sounds lucrative.
He handed everything back.
Here you go, Cowboy Dan, a resident of 85 Franklin Street. Nice area. That's all I want for now. But if I ever do have need of a loan, glad to know you're so willing to part with your cash.
Then to Gabriella.
Now, about Ms. Sarah. The reason she's visiting my friends is because of your boss, which maybe you figured out.
Charles Prescott disappearing, which troubled me mightily. You've heard from the police about that, I imagine?
Yes, but what does...
A finger to his lips silenced her.
Yes'll do just dandy. Don't say any more unless I ask, okay?
She nodded, her hands clenched.
Now, if the fine constabulary of the city of New York calls you again, don't talk to them. If your phone rings and you don't recognize caller ID, don't pick up. If they leave a message, don't return their calls. If they stop you on the street and ask you anything from the time of day to where to buy good donuts when they're on break to details about your boss's underwear preferences, tell them you're not saying anything until you see your lawyer. If I find out you've been talking to the police, I won't be happy. And that means
Ms. Sarah won't be happy.
Stop it! Quit playing these games! Gabriella swallowed and stared at the windbreaker and doll. How do I know you have her? Maybe you stole them. Joseph carefully rolled the blue windbreaker up and slipped it into the bag, dropped the doll on top of it.
Here's what happened. Your ex-husband, Timothy, dropped your daughter off at her dance class this morning. Not long after that, an associate of mine, who looks like Tim's father, came to the school and signed her out. Grandpa's name and picture are on the assigned release list.
How did you know that? Gabriella whispered in shock.
Joseph seemed not in the mood to answer.
He said that there was a change of plans and he was supposed to take Sarah to some friends. You had an unexpected trip. Grandpa Lookalike dropped her off with said friends, i.e. me. That's how it worked. And pretty damn smooth, if I do say so myself.
No, she wouldn't go away with a stranger, Gabriella cried.
The last time she saw her grandfather was 2 years ago. I learned that with a few mouse clicks. All that social network stuff. People are so careless nowadays.
Wiping her eyes with her fingertips, she whispered, I don't have much money, but I'll get you whatever you want. I'll borrow it. I'll... Joseph's amused eyes took in Daniel again.
You're getting tense there, cowboy. You're getting antsy. I can see it. Like you're thinking about playing hero.
You want to take a pen and stab me in the eye?
Well, first I'd kill you before you got 6 inches toward me. But if you managed to grab a bat or have an RPG hidden on your person and you took me out, what do you think would happen to our Sarah?
Be a little smarter, okay?
Daniel said evenly,
The police will get you. And the FBI. Kidnapping's a federal crime.
Joseph sighed.
Oh, please.
His eyes swayed back to Gabriella. His voice was more reasonable now.
Listen, she's fine. She's watching TV. She's got some toys. She thinks she's with some friends of yours she hasn't met. You had to go out of town for a day or two.
If you hurt her, I'll...
Movie dialogue alert!
Let's not waste time, okay?
I want to talk to her. I want to see her.
In a minute.
Please.
In a minute.
Joseph looked around them. There were no observers.
Now listen to me carefully.
Are you listening?
Yes, but...
Shh. All I want is you to listen.
All right.
She looked down past her trembling hands. Have you heard from Charles Prescott today?
No, I swear. I'd tell you if I'd heard from him, please. What do you want?
Joseph was nodding. Again, he looked up and down the street out the front door. A few passersby, but nobody was paying this group any attention.
There's a list with detailed information on some clients of Charles's. 32 of them, to be exact.
32? She asked, looking quickly at Daniel.
That's right. He called it the October list. These were special clients he did, let's say, some private work for.
I've never heard of it.
That's not really my concern now, is it? Anyway, I'm one of those clients, and we were involved in an important project, which has been derailed thanks to your boss vanishing unexpectedly. I don't like derailings, and now I need to be in touch with the others. Without him, we're a rudderless ship. Did you catch that word, by the way? Need the list? And you're going to get it for me.
But how can I get you something I've never heard of?
You knew Charles better than most people. Even if you're telling the truth.
I'm not exactly sure about that, by the way.
But even if you are, you better than anybody can figure out where it is.
Daniel said,
But if it was that important, he wouldn't have kept it himself. He'd give it to somebody for safekeeping. His lawyer, his...
His lawyer doesn't have it. I... checked.
Gabriella asked, Mr. Grossberg, you've talked to him? Joseph paused, and his thick lips eased into what might have been a smile.
We had a meeting. A
discussion. I'm convinced he doesn't have the list.
Meeting? You don't mean that at all. What the hell did you do to him?
Relax, he'll be okay in a month or two.
He's 70 years old. What did you do?
Gabriella, we on the same page here. I don't need you to be weird. I need you to be focused for Sarah's sake. Now, I heard about the list from a little bird who's no longer with us, by the way.
What? Joseph wrinkled his nose, dismissing her shocked expression.
This Tweety Pie, I was saying, this little bird, told me that Charles was so paranoid he didn't keep the list on computers. He said if the Mossad could be hacked, then he could be hacked. so he only had hard copies, and he kept one in New York. It's here somewhere. You get to find it.
How?
Joseph held up a finger. Maybe you know more than you think you do.
I don't. Maybe some other employees heard of it, but...
Elena Rodriguez, his nod to affirmative action. The occasional temps, the bookkeeper. No, you were the only one who worked that close to Mr. Charles Prescott. He told me that. He said there was nobody like Gabriella. So you've got to be
the little gal who can.
I need you to find me the October list.
He turned his eerie gaze at Gabriella probingly.
And there's something else I want. The initial fee I paid Charles. I want it back. $400,000.
Fee? Gabriella asked. There is no upfront fee at Prescott. We get an annual percentage of the portfolio.
And then she nodded and added with disgust. But I get it. These are the special clients you're talking about. These 32.
Exactly.
But if you're secret, how would I know where any money for you people is?
Oh, that stung.
Joseph pretended to pout. Daniel said,
Listen, Joe, be realistic. If her boss took off, he'd take the cash with him.
Joe?
The man looked around broadly.
Joseph.
Oh, moi.
He smiled. Charles left town pretty fast. According to my sources, when Prescott heard there was a warrant, he bailed and didn't get all the money he could have.
Maybe the police found some of it, but I'll bet there's a lot more. And I'm hoping for your sake and Miss Sarah's that you can hit the jackpot. Now, Gabriella, let's get some more ground rules set. First, like I said, no police. And a cone of silence with everybody else. Your ex-husband, your best friend, your hairdresser, everybody.
You're despicable. Joseph turned to Daniel, who looked like he was considering slugging the man.
Sorry you walked into the middle of this, but you get the picture. You don't seem stupid. You keep your mouth shut, too. You agree to that?
Yeah.
Joseph laughed.
If looks could kill.
To Gabriella, he said, Now it's nearly noon. I'll need the list by start of business Monday, so I'll generously give you until 6 tomorrow to find it. Sunday. But about the money, that's a different story. In case everything falls apart and the police come knock, knock, knocking on my door, I'm going to need that cash in my hot little hand so I can jump ship. That I want by 6 o'clock tonight.
Tonight? Impossible, she said, gasping. $400,000?
For Sarah's sake, you better figure out how to make it extremely possible. Then, with an edge of resolve in her voice, Gabriella said, I'm not doing anything until you let me talk to my daughter.
You can't talk to her.
Joseph opened his phone and displayed a video.
But...
Daniel and Gabriella looked down. The cute blonde girl was sitting watching TV cartoons, oblivious to the shadowy forms of two adults in the background.
How could you do this?
She raged once more. Joseph sighed, looking bored, and put the phone away. Time for a pop quiz. Now, what's the most important ground rule?
No police.
The words sounded as if uttered underwater.
Hooray! You get an A+.
He picked up the bag containing the doll and the sweatshirt.
Oh, and by the way, somebody'll be watching you. Every minute. You do believe me. No need to answer.
See ya!
And he was gone. Chapter 10. 10:30 a.m. Saturday, 45 minutes earlier. Light bore down on the foursome in Central Park. Stark light. Painful. Putting away his NYPD gold shield, Naresh Sarani glanced at Daniel Reardon, ignored him, and asked Gabriella, Have you heard from Charles Prescott today? Even the brilliant sun couldn't warm the detective's gray complexion.
My boss?
No.
My God, is he all right?
Her eyes eased toward Daniel.
The other detective, Brad Kepler, had noted him too, but was ignoring him as efficiently as his partner was.
When was the last time you saw him?
Tanned Brad Kepler asked. Yesterday, at work. In the morning. Then I went to a meeting and was out all day. Has there been an accident? Please, you have to tell me. They were regarding her with what seemed to be suspicion. Sarani offered, Mr. Prescott has disappeared, with, it seems, a lot of his clients' money. Gabriella barked a laugh. No, that's impossible. There's a mix-up.
I'm afraid not. Detective Sarani and I are with the Financial Crimes Division of the Police Department. Mr. Prescott's been under investigation for the past 2 months.
A different Charles Prescott. It has to be a different one. Sarani had taken to doing most of the talking, and he continued now. The SEC and the FBI were investigating cash flow into and out of suspicious stock trading accounts here and abroad. Some of those accounts were set up by Mr. Prescott, and it appears they were for the benefit of various clients. There were New York connections, so we got involved. It's been going on for months. It can't have, Sarani continued. We were going to raid the office and arrest him at home this morning, but he must have gotten word about the investigation and fled late yesterday. There are teams going through the office and his houses now. He's vanished, cleaned out a half dozen accounts in the U.S., and transferred the money into untraceable accounts overseas. She looked down. They were standing at a water main access panel in the sidewalk. The ironwork was from somewhere other than New York. It wasn't even American. She told them, He did say he was going to work late yesterday. I told you, I was at a meeting out of the office most of the day. I saw him for about an hour in the morning. We hardly said a dozen words. I assumed he worked late and then went home. He didn't go home. We had it under surveillance. He left? Oh, God. Kepler asked Daniel.
You a friend of Ms. McKenzie's? That's right. Do you know Charles Prescott?
No, Gabriella said. He doesn't. Daniel explained.
We just met last night, Gabriella and I.
They lost interest in him, as if thinking it had been a pickup, a night of sex and breakfast this morning. Daniel didn't seem to care about their impression of him. She continued, This just has to be a mistake. First of all, Charles would never do anything illegal. It's not conceivable. Her voice quivered. She cleared her throat. If he left unexpectedly, I'm sure it was an emergency. One of his clients had a problem. Charles is that way. He's more than an investment advisor. He's a friend.
A problem, yeah. A federal indictment,
Kepler added.
Really, Ms. McKenzie, there's no mistake.
He was unemotional, but you could also hear a fragment of irritation in his voice. She was blurting now. I'm the office manager. How could he possibly do anything like that without my knowing? How could that be? Daniel stirred, his meaning probably. That might not be the wisest thing to say, suggesting she was complicit. She fell silent. Sarani blinked through his none-too-effective shades and said, We don't have any evidence you were involved in the scheme. His tone, however, added the word yet onto the end of that sentence. Who are the clients you were mentioning? Gabriella demanded. We don't have any names. A fair number were from the Far East, South America, and the Middle East, according to the FBI. They've been tracing the cash and stock purchases. Gabriella laughed, albeit a bit hysterically. It is a mistake. I've never heard of any clients there, and I know all of them. Sarani countered, Well, our information is that he did have clients there. 32, apparently. And he was shuttling money into these accounts. Who knows why? Money laundering, most likely, but we aren't sure. My God, a dismayed whisper. 32 clients? That was as of 2 days ago. Gabriella opened her mouth and then slowly pressed her lips together as if words failed her completely. Sarani, Ms. McKenzie, you have to understand, Mr. Prescott caught us by surprise. We knew he had a one-way ticket to Zurich on Columbus Day weekend, so we thought he'd be in the country until then. One way? Gabriella said. No. I make all his travel arrangements. He didn't have any plans to leave. Surely not one way.
Well, he did, Kepler barked.
His partner continued. Prescott must have gotten word about the investigation and skipped early. But not to Switzerland. We don't know where. So we need to get the names and addresses of those 32 clients. You didn't find anything at the office? Sarani explained. We know he flew to St. Martin yesterday about 6 p.m. He disappeared after that. The authorities down there can't find him. Now we're hoping you'll cooperate. We need to know where he went.
Tell us what you know,
Kepler said emphatically, dark eyes narrow. I don't know anything.
You probably do, Gabriella,
Kepler said with a sardonic tone.
For instance, did you know he had a house in Miami?
His beach house, of course.
There, see? You did know something.
And yet you didn't volunteer it. Let's keep going. How about other houses?
Overseas is what we're particularly interested in. Or any friends or romantic partners he might be staying with.
She was looking down at the sharp shadows on the sidewalk, the sunlight falling stridently on leaves.
Miss Mackenzie?
She looked up. What? Kepler asked more bluntly.
Does Prescott have any homes outside the country? Does he visit anyone in particular in any foreign countries?
No, not that I've ever heard of. He goes to the Caribbean a lot. I mean, he has clients there. The look on the cops' faces said, we know he does. Some of them among the infamous 32, of course.
Come on, Gabriella, keep going. You're on a roll.
Daniel said,
why don't you lighten up? You just delivered some pretty tough news, and I don't think you handled it very well.
The cops ignored him yet again. It was Sarani, the easier-going one, who continued. Think back, Ms. Mackenzie. Any references to trips he'd taken? People he was going to see?
Kepler said. Looks like you're thinking of something. Share, come on.
Daniel glared at him, but the cop kept his eyes fixed on Gabriella's face. She said, you mentioned St. Martin. When he was down there, he sometimes flew to St. Thomas. I don't know who he met with. Maybe one of those 32 special clients you mentioned. All I know is that this man was from Europe and he lived in St. Thomas 9 months out of the year. And he had a big yacht, a huge one. I think Island or Islands was in the name of the boat. The cops looked at each other as if they were intrigued by these crumbs.
Okay, we'll check that out, Sarani said.
Kepler nodded.
Good job, Gabriella. I knew you had it in you.
Daniel seemed to want to slap the smirk off the detective's face. She asked Sarani, have you talked to Elena Rodriguez, Charles's other assistant?
Yes, an hour ago,
Kepler answered.
She wasn't any more helpful than you were.
Sarani handed her his card.
If you can think of anything else, give us a call.
She took it, but then her hand dipped, and her face revealed yet more dismay. She stared at the policeman. But, my God, I just realized. I mean, my job? What am I going to do for money? My salary and my retirement funds? Sarani glanced at Kepler, who at last showed a facade of sympathy.
I'm sorry to say, but Prescott cleaned out all the company accounts late last night. Payroll and retirement, too. He moved close to $25 million into a bank in the Caymans, and then it vanished. There's nothing left. Not a penny.
Chapter 9. 10 a.m. Saturday, 30 minutes earlier. The two made their way past the sheep meadow in Central Park and under the boughs of trees lit by unfiltered sun. The leaves still clung to branches, and the configuration of tissue and vein was as busy and colorful as a Jackson Pollock painting, changing shade and glow constantly. The wind was persistent. Her purse over her shoulder, Gabriella carried in one hand the Tiffany bag that Daniel had brought her, and in the other a paper sack containing a walnut cream cheese bagel for her daughter. Let's go that way, she said, nodding. Soon they were at the reservoir, walking wide of the path to stay clear of the many manic runners. A serious race walker, with his camel gait, overtook many of those jogging. The conversation had turned substantive, typically morning after meeting, and Daniel asked about her history with Prescott Investments. She added with some passion, "I love the work. I mean, really love it. I was one of those people who got good grades, graduated with honors, all that. But I didn't want to do anything practical. I was Ms. Creative. That's what was important to me. Writing, drawing, design, photography mostly. A headhunter sent me to Charles Prescott. He needed a freelancer to take some photos for a brochure." Gabriella smiled. "He was asking me about using Photoshop and some other software, and right in the middle of the interview, he stopped me. He said, 'Forget it.' I thought I was going to cry. I really needed the job. But he laughed and said, 'I've seen your portfolio. The photos are great. You're an artist. But I can tell by talking to you, your real talents are analysis and organization. Business.' Of course, I thought he was just telling me to get lost. But then he offered me the job on the spot. Office manager. Full-time, benefits, everything. At first I was insulted. I mean, I knew I was going to be a famous artist. But then I admitted maybe I didn't want that." Gabriella regarded Daniel with a smile. "So have you learned not to ask me any questions? You get a whole Google search of information. You going to flee?"
"Not yet. So far, this isn't the disaster last night turned out to be."
Then Daniel angled his head in that charming way of his and added with just the right amount of serious,
"But you didn't give up your photography."
"Right. In fact, it was funny, I got more productive. Working full-time was liberating. I didn't have to worry about making a living with the pictures or designing, art, writing. I could take the images that moved me. And it turned out Charles was right. I had a head for business. Running the office, negotiating equipment leases, planning meetings, bookkeeping, everything. Meeting Charles saved my life. I was going through the divorce and I needed some direction, some validation, you know. He became my mentor. And guess what?"
"He never hit on you."
"Not once. Always a gentleman. Kind, funny, just a wonderful man. In a business where there are a lot of people who aren't so wonderful."
"I know that all too well."
They walked slowly over the pocked sidewalk. Their shoulders brushed several times. She felt an electric charge each time that happened. "Funny. Once or twice in your life, you meet somebody who's a good person and it changes you forever. That's Charles."
"And I assume," Daniel said, "that he knows the business. He makes money."
"Oh, yeah. Charles is a genius. We've done well."
"Maybe I'll give him a call. I'm always looking for outfits to do business with. Something to think about. And does he handle your investments? Your 401k or annuity?"
"He's put me in a couple good positions." The words break to a halt as she blinked, her mouth open. Daniel was clearly struggling to keep a detached expression. Then he gave up and coughed a laugh. "Shit," she said, chuckling as well. "He suggested some investment strategies. I won't become a millionaire, but when Sarah's ready for college, there'll be money for that."
"Does your ex contribute?"
"Interesting change of tack," she observed. She kept her voice neutral as she said, "Tim's trying to find himself. I used to joke, to myself, he should look under a rock. But he's doing the best he can, I think. It's just, if you have children, they're your priority. If you're not happy at your job, suck it up until they graduate. If you're depressed, deal with it for their sake. If the last thing in the world you feel like is another ballet recital, shut up and go." Gabriella clicked her tongue. "Okay, nothing more from me on my ex. Now tell me about your kids." He laughed at the pregnant pause.
"Okay, Bryce and Steven, 15 and 17.
He described two handsome, all-American sorts of boys. He added that they were smart and never did anything worse than sneak a beer or get home an hour or so late.
"No drugs, no fights."
Daniel explained that he had plans for them to go to good colleges, but not Ivy League. He wanted them to get solid educations, but at big, diverse schools.
Finance? Business?
I wouldn't mind it. Capitalism's been good to me. It's exciting. I love it. But whatever they're happy with is the main thing. That's the only way to be a success. Who knows? Maybe they'll be artists, writers, or photographers. Anyway, does anybody really know what they want to do until they're 30?
Not far away, an elegant horse, ridden by an attractive young brunette in full gear, cantered along the bridle path. He asked,
"You have your camera? You could take a picture for Sarah."
"No, I don't carry it around generally. Besides, I've taken lots of horse pictures." They watched the beautiful creature disappear north, striding toward Harlem. She was silent. Daniel frowned and glanced up the sidewalk. "What?"
"Just thought I saw somebody looking our way."
The light grew fierce and he pulled on Ray-Bans. She looked. "I don't see anybody."
"Imagination, maybe. Some man," I thought, "in a dark overcoat."
They continued their stroll to her apartment, looking over some of the vendor carts. Used books, CDs, food, of course. Always food. Then Gabriella sensed Daniel's body language shift. He said,
"That complication you were telling me about at the restaurant, how much of a complication is he?"
He glanced back once more to the spot where he thought someone had been watching them. "Frank Walsh isn't going to be following me."
"No? Are you sure? Wait, is he bigger than me?"
She sized up Daniel's athletic shoulders, arms, and chest. "If it comes down to a fight, I think you'll win." He exhaled.
"Then I'll relax."
"Seriously," she said. "Frank is a nice guy. He's dependable. He's sweet." Daniel began to laugh hard at the telling word. "I'm there." She pointed to a nondescript building up a cross street, affordable only because of the bizarre but kind rent laws in New York City. Daniel began to say something, but at that moment, two men in suits, which didn't fit particularly well, approached with obvious intent. They didn't come from the place in the park where Daniel had believed he'd spotted their follower, Gabriella noted. One of the men, Anglo and tanned, wore aviator shades. The other, of Indian, South Asian extraction, wore those glasses that dimmed automatically in the sun. Gabriella blinked, looking down at their NYPD badges and ID cards.
"You're Gabriella McKenzie?"
Yes, I am. "Who are you?" The one with the aviator sunglasses said briskly,
"I'm Detective Kepler. This is Detective Serrani. Could we talk to you for a moment?"
Chapter 8. 9 a.m. Saturday. 1 hour earlier. They sat across from each other in the spattered window of Irving's Deli, Upper West Side. The restaurant, a mash of linoleum, dinged chrome, and worn wood, was chaotic. The smells were of garlic, fish, bagel steam, toast, coffee. Mismatched perfume and aftershave, too, sprayed on in lieu of a shower. On Saturday, why preen? The day was beautiful, a bright weekend in September, and people were swarming. Many locals were at tables and in the queues, but many interlopers, too, as Gabriella said.
"You mean from my hood?"
Daniel called over the ocean roar of the patrons.
"Tribeca?"
"We're thinking of requiring passports for you people to cross 14th Street," she said.
"That's profiling,"
Daniel said. They returned to their food. She thought it curious that Daniel wore a suit on the weekend. Gray, like yesterday, though a different cut, and a dress shirt of blush pink. No tie. Had he planned to attend a meeting later? Or was he simply more comfortable not wearing casual clothes? Gabriella was in tan stretch pants, a burgundy sweater, pearls too, ankle boots. He'd looked at her figure once, when he thought she wasn't paying attention. The sweater was tight. The table was small, and she adjusted the distinctive turquoise Tiffany bag on the corner. "Thanks again for this."
"The least I could do."
Daniel asked where exactly she lived relative to the deli, which was on Broadway near 75th. Gabriella grimaced. "About 4 blocks away. I come here way too often. The hips I have Irving's to thank for. Her eyes swept around the counter, piled high with every imaginable taste. Kosher, I've learned, does not mean low calories. She paused, frowning. I'm waiting. Daniel tapped his forehead with a palm.
What hips?
Too little, too late.
But obviously you work out.
I'll give you a few points for that, she said. Daniel looked philosophical.
You notice when men say to women, oh, you work out, it's a come-on line. When women ask it, they want to know if he's going to cuddle in bed on Sunday mornings or get up at dawn for a date with his Adidas.
I'd have to think about it. Was that a come-on line? Daniel asked.
You want some jam?
Breakfast was coffee, pumpernickel bagels, and smoked salmon. No onions. Onions are a fourth or fifth date thing, Gabriella announced.
Is this a date?
She was thinking about last night. Her response was, I don't know that we need to overthink it.
Fair enough. Still, you manage an investment house and I run a venture capital firm. We're professional overthinkers, no?
True, she said.
But it's not overthinking it to say we survived a completely excruciating night last night.
No, that's accurate. He frowned.
You're picking at your food. Can I have that piece of salmon? The lonesome one on the side?
Yours. He speared and ate it.
What are your plans for today?
I pick Sarah up at 1 from dance class, and we spend the rest of the weekend together.
You two have a great time. I can tell.
Oh, we do. Her eyes grew wide. We go to American Girl and FAO, naturally. But MoMA and the Met, too. Sarah asks for the art museums. She's so smart. I have to keep reminding myself she's only 6.
Smart. So she's got your genes.
She's got my temperament genes. Oh, I think I just sniped at my ex again. I told myself I wasn't going to do that. They nodded to the young male server for coffee refills and thanked him. Daniel looked her over with a coy smile.
Is this where you tell me about the complication?
Gabriella laughed hard.
You make your clients a ton of money, I'll bet, with that kind of insight. No engagement ring,
Daniel said, glancing toward her finger.
You're beautiful, which, by the way, is less of a come-on line than, wow, you totally work out. I just have a feeling there has to be a complication.
Okay. There's this tiny complication.
How tiny?
Stop it, she laughed again. His name's Frank. Frank Walsh.
What an awful name,
Daniel said, wrinkling his perfect nose. Are you listening?
Tell me about Frank,
he said, thumping the last word with his lips.
I'm dying to know about complicating Frank.
You're mean. We date some.
Are you going to marry him?
After a pause. Fact is, he's a little more interested in me than I am in him.
Never heard of that happening before,
Daniel said sardonically.
I actually got proposed to by a woman on a first date. She popped the question as soon as she heard I had a job. I'm not making that up. But I should add that there was some tequila involved.
Did you say yes?
To what?
Daniel asked with feigned innocence. She continued, Frank's quirky. He's a computer nerd. And reclusive. But he knows movies, which I love, and he's funny and considerate. You don't find that a lot nowadays.
Here's my guideline,
Daniel said.
The sweet factor.
Sweet?
If you describe your present love interest as infuriating and exasperating, then you're in love. If you say he's sweet, it's doomed, and you need to ditch him pronto for somebody who infuriates you.
I'm withholding all future adjectives about Frank for the time being. She glanced at her watch. I don't have to be at the dance school for a while. Want to walk me back to my apartment?
Good idea,
he said.
It'll help work some of that excess weight off your hips.
Nice try. But you're not infuriating me. Yet. She took his fork, which contained his last piece of salmon, dunked the pink cube in sour cream, and ate it fast. Part 2. Chapter 7. 10 p.m. Friday. 11 hours earlier.
You know, I have to be honest, Gabriella told Daniel Reardon. This has been about as bizarre an evening as I can remember.
Are you offended? I didn't mean to offend you.
He made no comment about her assessment. Instead, he asked,
But was it a date?
She thought for a moment.
It was date-like.
Date-light?
Like, she corrected.
Ah. They were walking north on Broadway from Battery Park through the cool September evening. A checkerboard of windows in the nearby office buildings, many illuminated, some dark. The worlds of law and finance never rest, even on Friday night. The streets were still busy with traffic, if dwindling, of pedestrians. Limos queued in front of the posher buildings.
Bizarre, he repeated quizzically. The restaurant, you mean?
Well, that was part of it. They'd eaten in a dive of an Indian place. Curry and tikka and kingfisher beer. The air had been tropically humid and heavy with sandalwood. The canned sitar music, corny, and the food, perhaps the best South Asian cuisine she'd ever had. The feature dominating the room was a massive saltwater aquarium, easily 10,000 gallons. Gabriella had been captivated by the colorful fish which eased or darted throughout the tank. Shrimp was on the menu, she noted, but no other seafood was represented.
Good thing, she'd told him, nodding at the aquarium. Just wouldn't be right.
Mostly by bizarre, Gabriella said, I was actually referring to what happened before dinner.
Oh, that.
And thinking back to those hours, while there were many memories, most prominent was Daniel's touch as he lifted a silk handkerchief and wiped the moisture from her brow. Once again, she now felt the tumbling within her, low, as she had then. Silence for a time as they walked towards Subways. Her station first. Daniel finally asked,
When you called your ex, I wasn't listening, but I noticed you didn't talk to your daughter for very long. Is everything okay?
Oh, she's fine. Sometimes when her dad has her and he's nearby, she clams up. They get along fine. He's good with her. But you know how it is. Exes. Daniel's wryly twisted smile said that he knew all too well. A mid-September breeze encircled them.
You cold?
A little.
Take my jacket.
No. She pulled her own light tweed around her more tightly. I'm fine. He didn't persist. He'd probably sensed that once she'd come to a decision, it would remain made. Which was largely true of Gabriella. She gave a grimace and pointed to a plaza near Wall Street they were just passing. Banker's Square. See that building there? She pointed to a squat structure situated next to the new stock exchange facility, still bustling with construction work even at this hour. On the other side was a medical center, a branch of a major uptown hospital. I have that to thank for my ruined weekend.
It doesn't look that intimidating.
If you only knew. In a few minutes, they were at the subway station where she'd catch the train to the